Well, Brenda Nile is one of Australia's most acclaimed biographers. She's written lives of the writers Mary Grant Bruce and Ethel Turner, of artists Judy Kassab and Arthur Boyd, and of Melbourne's very controversial Catholic Archbishop Daniel Mannix. And that's just a few of them. Well, now she turns her attention to her own family in a book called Can You Hear the Sea? My Grandmother's Story. For Books and Arts, here's Kate Evans.
Brenda Nile, can you describe the box your grandmother gave you when you were 10 years old?
It's a rather unpretentious little box. Wouldn't hold a great deal, would hold perhaps 50 or so letters, maybe more. You could put away precious things in it. You could barely put a penguin book inside it to give an idea of the size. Well, you could put half a dozen of them. But it's a square box and has a lock and key. And that was one of the things that attracted me to it as a 10-year-old, with the appeal of a secret space to put private things in.
And what did you know about its history when you were 10? What did your grandmother tell you about it?
I don't know who told me. It might have been my mother, it might have been my grandmother, but I did know that when my grandmother came to Australia by sailing ship in 1888, it was a long journey, and her brother, who had been ill and was suspected of TB, was coming to Australia for his health, accompanied by his two sisters, my grandmother, the younger one of them. And the two sisters, one did sketching. My grandmother was a great reader of novels. And the brother, I don't know, but he made friends with the carpenter, the ship's carpenter, and he started to make this box to give to my grandmother to keep things in. So as long as I can remember, it was referred to as Uncle Joe's box, because he had made it for her, and she'd kept it throughout many times in her life in Australia as something. It was in her bedroom. It was on a chest of drawers. It was something special. I had never seen her open it. It came to me when I was just about 10, a few weeks off my 10th birthday, as a Christmas present, and that was a surprise. I wasn't expecting her to give me that or anybody that. Was part of the furniture, part of her treasures.
Between her giving you that box and this book that you've written now called Can You Hear the Sea, you've immersed yourself in so many other lives as a biographer. Were you always going to turn to your grandmother's life, do you think?
No, I wasn't. I didn't think of it probably until a few years ago. Biography, as you'd know, generally turns people to celebrities. And my grandmother was the least of a celebrity that you can imagine. She led a very quiet life. In many ways it was tempestuous, because the big events of the century touched her quite closely, First World War, for example. But she wasn't, as so many subjects of biography are, she was not eccentric. She was a quiet woman. She didn't make any trouble. People didn't notice her very much. She was highly intelligent, but I don't know how much that would have been appreciated. She had been a widow for many years. She was widowed at 39 when my grandfather died very sadly at 43, and she'd concentrated on her children and on her private life. So I never felt that I wouldn't have thought of her as a promising subject for a biography.
So, but as a biographer, I'm wondering if the questions you asked of your grandmother Aggie's life were the same questions you ask in any biography, or if they were different. So what were the questions you wanted to answer?
The big one, I suppose, was how did it feel to find herself stranded in Australia, strange land? Why, after the death of her brother at sea, did she not go home again? She could have. Her parents had survived the great famine of Ireland, the 1840s, by migrating to Liverpool, where they had a pretty tough life, really refugees, you'd say. But they made good in Liverpool, and she could have gone back to a comfortable house because their fortunes had improved drastically. My grandfather must have been a very capable man, because he'd risen from barefoot boy on the factory floor to foreman, part owner and owner of a string of factories which his sons inherited.
Now, Brenda, I was surprised by how moved I was by the details of those factories What were they? What was that industry that was part of her family history?
Well, that surprised me too. I never thought about matches as being anything special. People in my youth were all lighting cigarettes all the time. I found it as moving as Dickens and his blacking factory and rather like it. The things that I'd read fed into it, I think, and the feeling that someone as close to me as that could have been through those experiences of being cheap child labour in Liverpool, doing shifts at night probably, and doing the light work of matchmaking, as they called it, filling boxes, dipping the wooden matches into the combustible stuff that made them light up.
It was horribly dangerous, wasn't it?
Horribly dangerous. So many got what they call fussy jaw from the red phosphorus. Oh, sorry, the white phosphorus. Red was safer. It was an appalling industry and very cheap labour. And reading the 1862 Royal Commission into the conditions in the factory, this is a period when industrial safety was just waking up, I thought, there's my grandfather. I was so relieved as I kept reading and found that he was one of the ones with the white hat on, that he hadn't been an oppressor. He had actually done his best for industrial safety and for the outlawing of the dangerous phosphorus, and that his sons, one of them, carried through the industrial reform that led to the outlawing of white phosphorus.
When you think about the whole process of writing this book and compare it to the other biographies that you've written, was it different?
I thought it'd be easier. It wasn't, actually. I realised afterwards that it has something in common with the others, because all my books, for whatever reason, have been about exile or displacement or something. I wrote a book about the Boyd family, who moved between hemispheres, footloose, and never quite settling anywhere. I wrote about Georgiana McCrae, who came because her husband had financial troubles. She didn't want to come. She's a colonial painter. She came to Australia because she had to.
Well, Mannix turns
Mannix,
up in this
yes,
book.
Yes, Mannix was sent. Mannix was always Irish. His being in Melbourne was because he had to come. He was under obedience, though for somebody as kind of willful as Mannix was, the idea of him coming under obedience sounds a bit funny, but of course he did. It was a promotion, or it was more likely actually to get him out of the way in Ireland because he was a bit of a firebrand. So yes, Mannix didn't want to come here, and really there is no book of mine, except perhaps the Durack sisters, that doesn't deal with displacement from the point of view of the protagonists. And in the Duracks, it was a bit the other way around, in that what was exposed in that book was the displacement of the indigenous people on the properties which the Durack pioneers had settled. So displacement, exile, loneliness is part of all the things I've written. So I suppose I have to ask the question, why did I keep writing about these people who were exiled when my own experience has been so settled, confined, and linked with one part of Melbourne? I thought, is it that I'm looking at the life I didn't lead, could have led, didn't, or is it when I began to think about my grandmother, I thought maybe that's where it comes from, that at some level, even as a child, an understanding of what it meant to her to be away from home, particularly during the war when her family faced the bombing, obliteration perhaps, maybe there was something that I absorbed through those early excursions with her and through my closeness to her that I wasn't aware of. I don't know, but there is a link. They're all a long way from home, and they all felt displacement.
Brenda, you've filled that wooden box with so many stories and so many interesting stories. Thank you so much for speaking to us on RN.
Thank you, Kate.
And Brenda Niles' book is called Can You Hear the Sea? It's published by Text, and she was speaking there with Kate Evans. And you can enjoy a longer version of that discussion with more on the politics and passions of this life story online at the Books and Arts homepage.